and that's Peace and Medicine, and we'd like to invite you to speak to us. There's, just so you know, a three-minute limit. If there are major issues, you can always send a letter, and then we'll read those. So with that, welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak, commissioners, members of the board. My name is Dennis Rossetti. For the past 13 years, I've worked for Sonoma County Conservation Action as the executive director, and I'm in the process of transitioning. I'm still working half-time there, but I've taken a position as public affairs director for Peace and Medicine, and that's who I'm speaking on behalf of today. Peace and Medicine is a Sonoma County-based medical cannabis dispensary network, and it prides itself on its patient care, safe access to high-quality medicine, and compliance with local and state environmental, municipal code, and safety regulations. I'm here today to address some concerns that we have with the order issued by the Water Board regarding marijuana cultivation. I want to first say that the North Coast Water Quality Control Board staff has been very helpful in answering our questions about the order. I attended the January 12th meeting here in this room, and I really appreciate your staff taking the time to be peppered with my persistent and about 2 hours of questioning on the different pieces of the order. To be clear, Peace and Medicine strongly supports protecting water quality and does not take issue with the intent of the order. We are taking steps to comply with the Water Board registration deadline of February 15th. We are, however, very disappointed by the lack of a third-party certifier to have been approved in our area of the district with only 3 weeks to go toward that deadline. Currently, there is one independent certifier 4 hours away in Fortuna. I tried my best to get and persuade that person to come down and be our person, but 4 hours each way was a little too much for him to handle, and he's got a lot of work to do up there. Our concern is multifaceted. First, we have concerns with our parcel number and address being listed on a publicly searchable database that anyone with an internet connection could discover and potentially target us for theft. We've worked closely with local law enforcement and are not opposed to having regulations, regulators or authorities aware of our compliant operations. Rather, it's the safety and well-being of our workers that concern us. Our workers are the lifeblood of our company, and we have extensive safety protocol in place to protect their workplace condition. Making our cultivation sites publicly searchable is not something that we feel is in the best interest of the community, nor is it relevant to protecting water quality in the district. In 10 years, as the economy continues to evolve around this crop, things may change in terms of the price per plant, but we have to deal with the realities today. There are new regulations also, a second piece, is that have been issued by the state of California, referred to as the MMRSA, MRSA, or the Medical Marijuana Regulation and Safety Act laws, which actually came out as you were already in your process. And our concern is that the Water Board's process is a little bit ahead of that process, and what's been created by the MMRSA is that we have a situation where local jurisdictions are creating their own rules to comply with the MMRSA, and the Water Board, rules are having folks comply by the 15th, which means that if we make our sites public by the 15th, we could be perceived as being, I've heard this a lot from other folks in the industry, that they may be perceived as being ahead of the local regulations. So there's just a little weirdness there. So our request is that the board expedite applications to allow more third-party certifiers to be approved for our region. And we also request that an extension of time be made so the cultivators that register after February 15th are not considered delinquent anyway by the state of California when they go for a permit. Even a 60 or 120-day extension will tremendously help with the numbers of registrations you're seeing. I've heard from staff that only 16 people have showed up to register so far, and there are far more than 16 sites in our district. Okay. Thank you very much for your time. I will be submitting a letter as well.
Okay, thank you for the letter to follow these issues. I want to say, because this is public forum, we're not allowed by law to take action unless it's been properly noticed. But I want to call on Matt St. John, our executive director, for comment.
Well, I appreciate Mr. Mazzotti's comments, and thank you for being here and being actively engaged in our process. And I'm pleased to hear that you were complimentary of our enrollment clinics. We've been having numerous clinics throughout the region to get the word out about the requirements and help people get enrolled. And so I think that staff have been doing all that we can to notify people of the requirements and be available to help with the enrollment process. I'll be honest that I wished that we had had more third-party entities approved by this point, but we are where we are. We're working hard to do that. With that said, there's nothing stopping any cultivator from enrolling individually. The third-party program is one option, but it's not the only option. And so my staff are very available to work with folks through the enrollment process. With that in mind, I'll take the request for an extension under advisement. I'm have a meeting that our division chief Josh Curtis is scheduling with our colleagues at State Board Office of Enforcement and Office of Chief Counsel to talk about our enrollment process and what we will do for those folks that are not able to enroll by the deadline. You know, we work under an enforcement policy, and the last thing that I'll say is that enforcement policy, it's a progressive enforcement policy. So, frankly, there's going to be some flexibility, but the specifics we're going to be working out with our colleagues at State Board.
Okay. I just want to say I will be looking forward to your letter. I did discuss yesterday that we may need some tune-ups on our conditional waiver, and it was made a conditional waiver so we could act pretty quickly. And we may very well need to have a hearing on some of the issues before the board, including the water management plans and how that's going to be coordinated with the California Department of Fish and Game and the State Water Rights Division, and the fact that we have a much faster process than they do. And so we want to coordinate, and we, of course, they're our parent agency. At the same time, we have to find a solution that someone who applies in the permit process can qualify for. So your comments are very timely. We appreciate them because we think we had enough to go forward. We don't think we got it perfect, and I'll look forward to your comments. Anyone else? Okay, Brenda Edelman.
Brenda Edelman, Russian River Watershed Protection Committee. I want to start by saying I really wish Bill and Allie well in any of their future endeavors. And I'm sorry Bill's leaving the board, but I do wish you both the best. Bill has been great in the West County, and he's done a lot of good work on that. I basically just want to express a few concerns. Your board has been outstanding in your consideration of the issue that I'm very concerned about, which is low-dose effect of endocrine-disrupting chemicals. And you have, from what I could tell, done what you can to make some progress and headway on addressing the issue. Unfortunately, the rest of the state is not going in the same direction you are. And I'm basically in the process of reading the draft water reclamation requirements for recycled water use. And I also read a document written by Data Instincts that did a survey of people. And let me just say that it is my impression that certain people, especially in Central and Southern California, are moving forward and in the process of trying to greatly expand recycled water use are ignoring the issue of low-dose impacts of endocrine-disrupting chemicals, both on human health and on the environment. And because they only have to be regulated by Public Health Title 22, and the Clean Water Act doesn't have much weight on this issue, they appear to be just ignoring all the impacts of wastewater discharges on fisheries and aquatic life. And I'm deeply disturbed that there is an intent, and I have the impression there is a conscious intent by many of the people promoting this issue that they're downplaying the issue that I am concerned about, and trying to send out the impression that because other people are doing it, it's really okay, and because there's only a tiny bit of chemicals left in the wastewater that's treated, it's okay. And nobody is talking about the fact that there's a vast amount of science. They basically say, well, there really needs more study to be done without acknowledging all the study that has been done. And there's the Endocrine Society represents hundreds or thousands of endocrinologists all over the world, and they emphatically state that in terms of the endocrine system, minute in the parts per billion range even, exposures at certain times to most species, and fish are particularly affected, have devastating effects. And they have a lot of transgender effects on fish. And I'm not going to go into detail. I've presented a lot of stuff in the past, and I'm going to make comments on this. I also made comments on an item on your agenda later where there's a report from NOAA Fisheries on the recovery plan. I made extensive there is a study done by Bill Peer Associates, and he's well known on the North Coast. And NOAA asked him to do a study on the impacts of endocrine disruption on sturgeon and salmonids on the East Coast. But in this recovery plan, they don't even talk about the issue, and I can talk about it more later. And I just briefly wanted to say that I hope you continue to do what you can to give this issue serious consideration to the best of your ability, and perhaps play a role in this. I don't know what role you can play, but if someone with authority and official position can express concern about the direction things are going in. I know we have a drought. I know Southern California is desperate for more water, but there needs to be great care taken. I'm not saying there should be no recycled water use, but it should be done with great care and great seriousness. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments, and you've kept us honest on this issue over the years. And I think the hardest thing is what specifically we can do is a very challenging task.
I have ideas.
We want to hear them. I'm going to tie next card is Sam. Samuel?
Sam Salmon, 956 Milson Place, Windsor. I'm here to speak on behalf of myself, and be careful of that. I'm here really because I was invited. Thank you. I received this in the mail. I've been involved with the town of Windsor for over 20 years and under regulation of your body for over 20 years, and I've never met you, never been in this, so that's really why I'm here. Two other reasons. I wanted to just kind of comment on what Windsor's done in terms of responding to your regulation. One thing we did was we hooked up to the geysers through our relationship with Santa Rosa, and that had an effect that we didn't go forward with a storage pond on property that the water agency owns. So there's these balancings, and what I'm really here to ask, or to ask really, is to, when you make decisions, we've been asked as a council and to use lenses. And the first lens I ran into was sustainability some 20 years ago, and that was my interest, and it's a lens that you look at. I just use the three-legged stool, so know that your charge is really the environment and waters, but in terms of sustainability, there's also the social equity issue and the economy. And I know your relationships with cities, a lot of times we're looking at the economy in terms of the environment and the social equity, because they're all sort of tied. And just recently coming forward is another lens that's coming forward to the county, and that's health in all policies. It's a growing area of when you look at your decisions, look at how they affect the health. When we think of health, one of the big issues is housing, and how does that affect, what's housing have to do with the Water Quality Board? Well, it might have to do with the cost of regulations. And so example, the other example I have is our phosphate removal, I think the TDL regulations. So the town of Windsor is, we're implementing that at a significant cost. And in one way, it's for our discharge into the Laguna Santa Rosa. That's what we'd be told. And when it came forward, I saw our discharge location. It's kind of wild that it would be Laguna Santa Rosa because it's really goes into almost directly into the Russian River. You may want it to regulate and for other reasons, maybe the town it itself, but our discharge is probably not, and I'm not a science and I'm ignorant, it's probably not really affecting the Laguna Santa Rosa as much as it would be affecting the Russian River. And to do that, we're going to spend money to comply with the regulations when we could maybe try to get to a non-discharge, you know, so that we don't have to discharge. And I think that's our ultimate goal. That's my ultimate goal. So that's really what I'm here for. And I thank you. It was a really nice presentation. What a nice way to meet you, to have those words said about Mr. Matthews and to know your dedication. Thank you very much.
Board member comment, staff? I just want to thank you for giving us the update. We appreciate it. Bob Leggy, Russian River Keeper.
Chair Corbett and board members, wish the Russian River Keeper. My name is Bob Leggy. I'm here to address the January 2016 Executive Officer's Report, specifically the two articles devoted to the topic of developing a water quality credit trading program in the Laguna. Similar programs have been developed in other watersheds throughout the United States for the same reasons that they are currently being considered here, to reduce the cost of point source compliance. They do nothing to cap or limit the biggest sources of pollution relied upon for credit generation, agricultural non-point source pollution. Laguna tributaries are each unique. Each type of effluent or runoff to be traded has different characteristics. What is really being traded, not discussed in the stakeholders' meetings, are quantities of water that contain, in the example of ag runoff, a pound of nitrogen plus an amount of phosphorus, an amount of sediment, an amount of hormones, an amount of pesticides, an amount of heavy metals, etc. In the case of wastewater treatment plant effluent, we are trading a quantity of water that contains 1 pound of nitrogen, an amount of phosphorus, amounts of various heavy metals, and some mixture of over 84,000 chemicals that are in use in industry, medicine, and in our homes. And similar concerns occur when examining the constituents of MS4 runoff, heavy metals, PAHs, etc., or the various industrial facilities that may increase input of currently unregulated or underregulated chemicals. Riverkeeper implores staff that the differences in the water bodies and the load constituents must be studied and evaluated beyond our current understanding before even considering such a trading program. To date, little or no data exists. The effects of trading agricultural runoff for stormwater, wastewater treatment plant, or industrial inputs has equated to disastrous results in other watersheds. One such watershed is the Chesapeake Bay. In March of last year, the USGS released a report that stated phosphorus and nitrate concentrations in that bay are substantially worsening and are among the highest in the nation. Phosphorus increased 48% in the last 10 years under the same TMDL-approved water quality credit trading program as is being proposed for the Laguna. Another important consideration overlooked by this stakeholders group is that most buyers will be looking to purchase credits from agriculture. No commitments have been made by the County Department of Ag or Farm Bureau as to the perpetual availability of credits, as would be needed by a new source. As we all know, agricultural land use is tied to crop prices in the real estate market. If the value of crops, such as wine grapes, outweighs the value of credits available, available ag credits may see a rapid decline. Additionally, new development occurs in great part on former ag lands. The former produces uncertainty in the long-term availability of credits and offsets. The latter produces a known decline in the availability of ag credits over time, allowing new sources of pollutants outside of known reductions by counting on long-term ag credit availability is risky and in the long run unsustainable. My question is, with the grape growing industry in this county striving to be 100% sustainable, from what sector are all these credits going to be generated? Releases of wastewater treatment plant effluent occur daily at a relatively constant rate. However, there's a huge amount of uncertainty in predicted, in most cases non-measurable, non-point source
and
reductions.
And then you need to summarize
when
your...
you consider the seasonal and annual variability in precipitation. This annual and seasonal precipitation uncertainty and the uncertainty of BMP effectiveness, soil types, groundwater depths, geology, to name a few, suggest that a more robust 3-to-1 trade ratio of pounds predicted to be...
Oh, okay, I'm going to cut you off. Okay. I'd recommend the letter. You raised a lot of complex and issues that require a lot of thought. And if you write the letter, I'm sure board members will give it the attention. And thank you for bringing it to us. And one super quick question. What's your one-sentence summary of the proposed alternative solution that's better?
Well, we have several, and I was just about to get into those, but I guess I'll have to save those for another time.
Okay, we'll look forward to your letter.
Thank you for allowing me to comment, and I will definitely be in front of you before again on this issue.
We have one other public slip, and I'm notorious for slaughtering first names, so I'm not even going to try on this one. It's hard for me to read, but Burr. Is the last name B-U-R-R? Is it Kimberly? Okay.
Wow, my handwriting's getting pretty bad. Sorry about that. Yeah, I just wanted to make a couple of comments because I'm not sure how long I'm going to be able to stay if I'm going to be here. The two items that I'm interested in this morning, the emergency regulations, I'm sorry, Kimberly Burr, B-U-R-R, from Forestville, and sad to see Bill going, but he was a great board member, and I wish him well. The two items have to do with the fish issue in our region, and I commented on the multi-species recovery plan. I think it's a great effort to, you know, look at these watersheds on a kind of more regional or multi-species approach, so I think that's a great, great progress. I think that it's really an important document, and I'm hoping that the agencies will use it as really important guidance, especially in the local land use agencies. And so if we all can kind of read it and apply it and implement it so that local land use agencies make better decisions, I think that would be really important. Also, the emergency regulations, I'm just really happy to see the agencies working together and supporting each other, looking at the science, looking at the best science, and trying to get a handle on what's going on in our watershed. So I just want to compliment all the agencies for working together on that and keeping on it, because it's really, really important. And I just wanted to say that Green Valley Creek is full of mud. It is so muddy. And I don't know what's going on with that, but it's a rural area, and it doesn't seem like it should be that muddy. There's lots of forest out there, lots of vegetation, and it's running like chocolate milk. And it's important breeding and rearing habitat for the coho and the steelhead. So I'd like to figure out what's going on with that. Is it where's the mud coming from, and how can we stop it? So those are the points I want to make, just general comments, and thank you again for all your hard work and attention to these important issues.
Thank you for your comments. I have one additional card, Tawny Logan from Sonoma County Growers Alliance.
Good morning. Thank you for your time. I want to say thank you first for your leadership and your concern on this issue and helping direct and guide a new industry that is coming above board and looking to become compliant and guiding best management practices, raising awareness to discharge and water use in general. I have a couple. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Tawny Logan with the Sonoma County Growers Alliance. I have a couple items I just wanted to address. I'm hearing that you've heard this this morning, I'm going to echo We're really concerned about the February 15th deadline. We're working really hard to get the information out to the cultivators throughout Sonoma County. We're being, we're receiving information and inquiries from surrounding counties. It's not enough time for us to get these operators to build the trust and to get them engaged with the resources and the agencies. We're scrambling, and we haven't really been able to capture as many as I think you want. I think the goal here is to help these operators understand water management, understand best practices, and become compliant and engage in above board practices. This February 15th deadline, one of my questions is, what happens on February 16th? What happens on February 20th or March 1st for somebody who wants to still submit a discharge waiver? That's a big question. If they are not compliant and they don't have this waiver filled in, are they not going to be able to apply for a permit in a locality? Will they then be forced into the black market? So we want to offer our support. Sonoma County Growers Alliance can host workshops. We can reach deeper into the community, bring them forward, do videos, disseminate it. We can get this information out, but we need more time to work together on this issue. So that's the most important thing, and I hope that we can really look at either pushing back that deadline, creating some form of protection for the personal information and or bringing in more third parties to protect that personal information for our operators. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I have a letter here that I'll turn in.
Oh, thank you. And then I'll call on our executive director.
Just wanted to address the question about what happens if somebody doesn't enroll by February 15th. By all means, they should enroll by February 16th or March 1st. They don't automatically, it means that they can't enroll. It just means that they're late. And when I was addressing Mr. Mazzotti earlier, we're in the process of determining, you know, exactly what type of progressive enforcement we will take. But nobody's going to receive any fines for not initially if they don't enroll by the deadline. Later, there may be fines that could be issued, but not initially. What I encourage is for folks that know they want to be compliant but haven't been able to fill out the paperwork to send us an email and let us know the intent to enroll. Mr. Jacobson, would you have anything to add to those comments?
No, I don't. I think Mr. St. John covered it. By all means, it's the February deadline. February 15th is not a drop-dead date. There's an opportunity to enroll at any point after that date.
Just a quick comment. Our goal is to get people enrolled. I do want to say we cannot waive our ability to do fines. If someone bulldozes the mountain, puts it in a stream, they will get a fine for that activity. I want to make that very clear. And just to staff, I know I mentioned this in the past, but I think the EPA 208 Best Management Practices Certification is a great checklist for certifying agencies, or the second one is the California Coastal Act for certifying local coastal plans from agencies. So if you want a base checklist on how to certify these organizations, I would repeat that. Those might be good role models. And thank you for your comments. And I do want to say it's going to be touchy-feely as we're going forward, but our number one goal is to get people in the system rather than just do it on enforcement, because we could actually enforce without our regs before they were passed. If you had a discharge of waste, you hadn't applied for a waste discharge requirement, you could be charged, and that door has actually, you know, never been closed. So what we're trying to do is how do we make this transition, and there will be some rough edges, and we appreciate you making comments to us on it.
Thank you.
Okay, I believe that concludes the public forum. Anyone didn't fill out a slip? Okay, it's completed. So the next item is approval of meeting minutes November 18th, 19th, 2015, and December 10th, 2015.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, I wanted to ask whether staff would entertain with the board a friendly amendment that timber coordination programs were discussed under the bullet points for strategic planning.
Just to clarify, so this is for the December 10th board meetings, board meeting, I'm assuming?
Yes.
And under the topics that were discussed to specifically identify timber regulations?
Yeah.
That sounds fine.
Well, coordination.
Coordination.
Yeah. Is the maker in the second?
Yeah,
okay. Then please call the roll.
Aye.
Board Member Hale.
Aye.
Chairman Corbett.
Aye.
Board Member Gant.
I have to abstain from the November meeting since I wasn't there, and aye on December 10th.
Board Member Juicy.
Yes.
Okay, the motion carries. The next item is presentation of Executive Officer's 2015 Water Quality Stewardship Award, and I'll call on Matt St. John.
Thank you. This is always a rewarding moment. So this is the third year that that I've been awarding the Executive Officer's Water Quality Stewardship Award. The award is designed to go to individuals or a team of folks that are doing work that goes above and beyond any of their own requirements and supports our efforts in water quality protection and support of beneficial uses. This year, I got a great handful of nominations, and so I couldn't choose just one award to give. So we're issuing two separate awards, the first to an individual, and the second is a team award. But I'll first speak to the Beretta family, and it's great to see Mr. Doug Beretta in the audience. The Beretta family has been running a dairy for several multi-generations in Sonoma County and has been a leader in the agricultural community within Sonoma County and really an early embracer of environmental regulation and the concept of stewardship in its truest sense of the word. Recently, the Beretta family was the first to implement a nutrient offset project on their dairy as part of the City of Santa Rosa's nutrient offset program. And so that is one example of their being out on the leading edge of embracing environmental regulation and just being a great steward of their property and the Laguna watershed. So this nomination came from several of our staff, Sherry Blatt, who runs our dairy program, David Kuzmar, who's working on the nutrient offset program, and Charles Reed. So with that, Mr. Beretta, thank you very much for all that you and your family do, and pleased to give you this award. The second award, as I mentioned, it's a team award. So in this fourth year of drought, it was important to me to bring attention to the good work that's been done from local entities to augment stream flows in the Russian River watershed. You'll hear a little bit more about this, coincidentally, in the first informational item later this morning. But the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and NOAA Fisheries jointly implemented what's called the Voluntary Drought Initiative. which was looking to work with on a voluntary basis with landowners to dedicate water to support fish. So a handful of landowners came forward, and again, you'll see a slideshow from Corey Gray of Fish and Wildlife showing some of the evidence of these very beneficial projects. So this is it's a team award. I came up with calling it the 2015 Coho Life Support Team. and the award goes to Department of Fish and Wildlife, NOAA Fisheries, and the Russian River Coho Water Resource Partnership, who jointly helped to implement this program and work with landowners. My hat is off to the Jackson Family Wine, who came forward and were the first to really put their money where their vision is, and to implement some programs and provide funds for others to put in off-stream storage. So the award goes to the Jackson Family Wine. Also, the Camp Meeker Parks and Recreation Department, who implemented a project in, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the name of the creek, Dutchville Creek, to Michael Payne and Chris Panham, property owners in Green Valley Creek, who also dedicated water, and finally to Gallo for their ongoing work providing flow augmentation. So it's a big group of folks. I'm going to first recognize Katie Jackson. I believe Gary Helfrich is in the audience from, not here, okay. Gary is from Camp Meeker Parks and Recreation District. Mr. John Nagel from Gallo. And I don't think Michael Payne or Chris Panham were able to be here today. We're going to give the next. Valerie is the chairperson of the steering committee of the Russian River Coho Water Resource Partnership, so she gets to be the recipient. Congratulations. And then want to recognize the two agencies that helped to make this happen. Corey Gray will accept this for Fish and Wildlife. And David Hines from NOAA Fisheries. Thank you very much.
Okay. And we'll have a write-up in the executive director report.
There is, yes.
Okay. I think that concludes this section. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and then we'll reconvene. We're back in session. Can board members please take the podium? And our agenda item is agenda item number 3, which is a